Of Songs, chapter 4. Just to give you a bit of background, for those of you who don't know, Lisa and myself, we've been married for just over 12 years. We knew each other since we were kids. Our parents met each other before we were actually born. So they were friends. We got to know each other and started dating after school. That didn't work so well. We broke up for some time. We dated again for 2.5 years. That didn't work so well. We broke up for 2.5 years. We dated again for a year. And we were engaged for 8 weeks and got married. And we've now been married for 12 and a half years. We have 3 kids, 3 daughters. So I live in the land of emotion. It is a daughter of 8. Her name is Michaela. Then Chloe is 4. And Pippa, the latest one, is 7 months old. We've certainly had a journey in our marriage. And a number of you have been married most probably a lot longer than us, some shorter. But we want to share about some experiences that we have learned through marriage in counseling other couples in marriage and then also our own marriage. And we're going to start by reading here together in Song of Songs, chapter 4. I'll read there from verse 1. And this is just to show you how the Bible talks about romance. And it is actually in the Bible what we're about to read. And we read there from verse 1. This is the lover talking to his bride, saying, "How beautiful you are, my darling. Oh, how beautiful," verse 1. "Your eyes behind your veil are doves. Your hair is like a flock of goats descending from Mount Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of sheep just shorn coming up from the washing. Each has its twin. Not one of them is alone. Your lips are like scarlet ribbon. Your mouth is lovely. Your temples behind your veil are like the halves of a pomegranate. Your neck is like the Tower of David built with elegance. On it hang 1,000 shields, all of them shields of warriors. Your two breasts are like two fawns, like twin fawns of a gazelle, that browse among the lilies until the day breaks and the shadow flee. I will go to the mountain of myrrh, onto the hill of incense. All beautiful you are, my darling, there is no flaw in you." Verse 9. "You have stolen my heart, my sister, my bride. You have stolen my heart with one glance of your eyes, with one jewel of your necklace. How delightful is your love, my sister, my bride. How much more pleasing is your love than wine, and the fragrance of your perfume than any spice. Your lips drop sweetness as the honeycomb, my bride. Milk and honey are under your tongue. The fragrance of your garments is like that of Lebanon. You are a garden locked up, my sister, my bride. You are a spring enclosed, a sealed fountain. Your plants are like an orchard of pomegranates with choice fruits, with henna and nard, nard and saffron, calamus and cinnamon, with every kind of incense tree, with myrrh and aloes, and all the finest spices. You are a garden fountain, a well of flowing water, streaming down from Lebanon."
And now the beloved to a lover, chapter 5, verse 10. "My lover is radiant and ruddy, outstanding among 10,000. His head is pure as gold. His hair is wavy and black as a raven. His eyes are like doves by the water streams, washed in milk, mounted like jewels. His cheeks are like beds of spice, yielding perfume. His lips are like lilies, dripping with myrrh. His arms are rods of gold, set with chrysolite. His body is like polished ivory, decorated with sapphires. His legs are pillars of marble, set on bases of pure gold. His appearance is like Lebanon, choice as it seems. His mouth is sweetness itself. He is altogether lovely. This is my lover. This is my friend, a daughter of Jerusalem."
Romantic interaction between this couple. And I think most probably as you listen to this, I mean, it's quite poetic, and there is teeth that looks like sheep, two by two. All of them has a twin. I mean, she's got a mouthful of teeth. But obviously, as you listen to this, I think for some of us, this memory might be very distant. Meaning that this is the way that we maybe felt 5 years ago or 10 years ago or at the time that we courted our spouse, where they were your lover, they were your bride, they were the groom, they were the one that you hoped and desired to be for. And then there was a day that you got married and it was wonderful and it was spectacular and it was something that you always dreamed for. And then there was the honeymoon. Now for some already, maybe the road got a little bit crinkled there. But then you come back and then there's life. this life, the adjustment of life, going back to work. Eventually there are children that comes along the way and challenges. And sometimes we lose this picture of what it is that God intended for marriage. And what God intended for marriage was to be able to have the kind of intimacy and romance that this couple is expressing right here. And what we want to talk about today is, how do you get this kind of intimacy back into your marriage? And some of us might have it right now, some of us might have lost it momentarily, some of us might not have had it for years. But we believe that through God's help, we all can get it back if we don't have it right now. And the way to get it back is to be able to get some awe into your marriage. Now the awe, the A stands for affection, the W for warmth, and the E for encouragement. In other words, if you want to bring some awe back into your marriage, what you need to have in your marriage is you need to have affection, you need to have warmth, and you need to have encouragement. And that is going to be the goal of this part of the session this morning, is to be able to explain this awe-like relationship to you that we can work on it towards bringing awe back into our marriage. So let's take the first one, affection. How can one be affectionate? There are obviously different forms of affection. I think when we think of affection, most probably men, the first thing that they think of is sex, okay? But that's not necessarily the affection that we are talking about right here. The first one we want to talk about, a form of affection, is words of affirmation. In other words, to affirm one another. There's a great proverb, in Proverbs 16, verse 24, that says, "Pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones." Pleasant words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. Listen to this proverb, Proverbs 25, verse 11. A word aptly spoken are like apples of gold and settings of silver. Words of affirmation can make all the difference.
I absolutely love this proverb. I mean, pleasant words it's like a honeycomb. Honey is sweet. Isn't that what pleasant words are like? It brings joy and satisfaction, and you feel good. It's a good thing. And I know for myself, life can often feel, I'm a wife and my mom, and I'm working part-time. It's, you know, life can feel to me sometimes like a constant clean, clean, clean. I don't know about other moms out there, or even just if you don't have kids, but it's, I feel like I turn my back and there's more dishes. There's more socks to pick up. There's clothes. There's laundry. There's towels. It's just a constant. And, you know, there's food to buy and dinner to prepare. And it can seem very unexciting. You know, it's like the mundane things from day to day. It's nappies to change. You get the picture. And it can feel physically and emotionally, it can not only feel, it is exhausting. And I can go to bed and feel like, did I even use my brain today? You know, it's just, you keep on doing it. And I can, at the end of the day, I can feel like a true tortured soul. And it's amazing what it does. Ivana just gives me pleasant words. It brings healing. If he says, thank you, and he's specific about what he's thankful for. Thank you for dinner. Thank you for cleaning up the house. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for looking out for the kids. It brings healing. It brings joy. It lifts my spirit. So there's incredible power in pleasant words.
Yes, words can make all the difference, I think, to both sides. And what we want to talk about again today as we go through it is, I think we sometimes think it's only the one side that needs something specific. In other words, it's only the wife that needs affirmation. But actually, the husband also needs affirmation. Everybody needs affection in one way or another. And we can give that affection through words that are affirming, that bring healing. And it is something as simple as to be able to say to your spouse, and I've often said this to Lisa, as I would say to her, I can't do what you do. I thank God that I just can't do it. I can't be a mom of three children. I just can't do it. What you do, I would die if I had. I just can't do it. I really appreciate you being you, and you being this for our family, and I appreciate who you are and what you do. In the same way, we need to continue to affirm one another. It could be something as simple as Lisa would often say to me, you're a great dad to the kids. I really appreciate how you play with them, or how interested you are in them, or the time that you have with them, or the dates that you take them on. It could be small things, but it's just, I appreciate you. I'll often say to Lisa, thank you for marrying me. and I think, oh, she could have said no, eh? But she didn't. She said yes. She said yes, and 12 years later, here we still are. But it's small things. It is for me, I'm a church minister. That's what I do for a living. And it is something as simple as after a sermon, my wife saying to me, "Well done. Good sermon." And if the rest of you complain, I'm okay with that. But if she could just say, "Listen, you're well done," or "I really appreciate that," or "I really appreciate this about you," or we were in a counseling appointment and she says, "Well, well done, I think you had a great discernment or great help." The small things is what makes the difference. Unfortunately, by nature, we tend to focus on the negative. There is a saying, it says, "Love is blind, but marriage wears the glasses." Okay? I don't know if you've ever experienced that. Love is blind, and then you get married. It's like, whoa. And what we do is we just see the negative. I want to ask you today, do you see the negative first? Or do you see the positive first? We need to be like hawks, looking for the good in our spouse. And when we see it, we need to be on it like white on rice. In other words, we need to be able to see it. There it is. Because we look at the negative, we can easily say where the spouse is a slob, where they're not listening to you, what it is that they're not doing. But if you want awe in your marriage, if you want affection in your marriage, you need to have words of affirmation. And we need to have it privately, and we need to have it publicly. By publicly, I mean is for me to be able to say in front of you guys, "Sweetie, I think you're wonderful. I think you're a tremendous mother, a beautiful bride. Thank you for marrying me." But that is one way of saying it publicly. Another way of saying it publicly is I'm talking to you. You come over for dinner, and I'm not talking to my wife. My wife is sitting there, and I'm saying, "Peter, you know what, Peter and Libra, I'm just so amazed by Lisa. She is just an absolute wonderful woman, and I don't know how I would do life without her. She is my absolute support and the wind under my wings." So she's I'm not even talking to her. That's number two publicly. Number three publicly is to say it to them while she's not even here. Often when I do a number of weddings a year, and when I do weddings, I always say this to people, boast about your spouse. And I say that you should be so boastful about your spouse that when they meet your spouse for the first time, people should say, "Wow, so this is Joseph. Wow, man, woo, dude." wow, this is Lisa Vanner speaks so fondly of you because I'm constantly affirming her. Can you imagine what that does to your marriage when you talk that way? The next one is thoughtfulness. In 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 7, it says, "Husbands," this is also under affection. How can we be affectionate by being thoughtful? "Husbands, in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives and treat them with respect as the weaker partner and as heirs with you of the gracious gift of life, so that nothing may hinder your prayers." Husbands, in the same way, and it's referring to Jesus' love for us, be considerate as you live with your wives. To be considerate means to be thoughtful, kind, attentive, being mindful. How can we be thoughtful? We can be thoughtful by knowing a need that needs to be relieved in our spouse. Like, and I think the men are immediately thinking of a sexual need. Okay, I'm not talking about now that too. But immediately knowing that there's a need that needs to be relieved in our spouse. In other words, when I, for instance, get home in the afternoon, the first thing that I usually do before I get home is I say a prayer. And it's not because of Lisa, it's because of the other three ladies that are waiting for me on the other side of the wall. But the first thing that I do when I drive up, I say a prayer, I drive to the gate, and then I try and assess the situation. Okay? In other words, what kind of relief do I need to give her right now? Now, what would be well is if I can just take the two older girls so that I can play with them and hang out with them and she still has Pippa, because then I can interact with the kids as well. But if it's been a night, a hot day, then I will assess and say, okay, she actually needs a complete break right now. I need to take the three girls, and I need to take them out of the house. Okay? Either outside of the house or off the premises. Okay, now that can be in a week or it can be in a weekend, but it's be able to assess the need and say, how can I relieve? I can see my spouse is strained. I can see my spouse is tired. Lisa would say to me sometimes, "Wow, you look dead tired," and we're both tired, but you look more tired. Do you want to just take a break for 30 minutes? You maybe just want to go and take a nap. It is seeing a need and relieving that need. It's being thoughtful.
You know, I think Vanessa often shared about our coffee dates that we have on a Thursday morning. And Van is an incredible, thoughtful man. A couple of weeks ago, I woke up and it was our coffee date morning. And he gave me this voucher and was a card.
You know, I read it.
I have to share it. I won't go in all the detail, but basically it came down to it's my day. And this voucher entitled me to go to Lanzarote out in Stellenbosch for a back and neck massage with the time, a pedicure with the time, and then a sister would bring our youngest, our seven-month-old, all the way to Stellenbosch, so because I'm still nursing, and then take her back. So I'll have a little bit of time with her, and then I'll have lunch with him, and then have all the spa facilities that I can use, and then go for a facial. I was like, what? But I mean, he was just so considerate and thoughtful. I was just blown away. Another sister picked up the kids. I mean, this is more than I could ever have hoped for. I mean, and this just truly blew my mind. And it was just a normal day. And he really just wanted to give me time out. Now, so thoughtfulness, considering what is the need, what is our spouse's need. For me, I think a lot of you know Vanna well. He's very activistic, and he's got a very full mind, and he's very focused and strategic. So a big expression of love for me is if he takes time out in his mind to think about me and to think about us and what it is that we need. I think when he says he prays for us or for me, but he's specific about it, that he doesn't just say, I prayed for you, but I prayed specifically for this and your appointments, for your emotions, for, you know, it's amazing to me that he can be think of all the detail, that he's thoughtful. You know, consider means you give attention, you think about, you examine. And I think for us as women, we need to examine how our moods and our emotions and our behavior affects our husbands. We've got to be careful and thoughtful not to cause hurt or inconvenience to our spouses. It means to take his needs and his emotions and his work and his dreams and his entire being into account when we're busy with stuff. You know, Vanna was sharing when he comes home, and I really appreciate him when he comes home and the attitude that he has. But whether we're working moms or wives or at home during the day, I think your husband's also tired when he comes home. You know, and we've got to be considerate of that. It's to consider. He comes home, his mind has been busy all day, he's been in meetings. What would be thoughtful for you? Is it to give him a break? Not for hours, but a couple of minutes. That he also needs me time. He also needs time with the guys. I think as women, we can so easily cheer for all of that for ourselves. But what is it that our husbands need?
Amen. Thoughtfulness can be in small things. It is knowing that you, Lisa, for instance, I think most people know that I like peppermint. So I like Magnum peppermint ice creams. I like peppermint chocolate. I like peppermint crisp. I like anything peppermint, really. It's close to a problem. for me, it's the most thoughtful thing when she actually buys me a peppermint crisp. Okay, then also what I do is I freeze my peppermint crisp. I like it cold. Okay, that's a little bit weird. I've got issues. But when she freezes it for me, in other words, when I come and I open the freezer and there's a peppermint crisp in the deep freezer, I'm like, wow, this is so sweet. Such a small thing, such a small item, but it makes a difference, being thoughtful. For the men, obviously this passage is specifically talking to us that we need to be considerate to our wives. And a way of showing affection in this considerate way is that we need to think how our decisions affect our wives. Okay, I think we think of us, meaning, oh, this is the car I want. Let me buy it. But we don't think, how would this affect my wife? or I'm going to go and play golf, or I'm going to go and watch sport. How does my decision affect my wife? The way that I spend my time, the way that I spend my money, the way that I make my decisions, how does it affect my wife? That's consideration, isn't it? And it says, when we are considerate and respectful towards our wives, that's when God hears our prayers. So it's a big deal. Okay, so number two under affection is consideration. Number three here is physical touch. I think that's pretty evident. I'm not going to talk about it too much. There are many passages that talks about this. The amazing effect that touch has. People were bringing little children to Jesus just to have him touch him. She said to herself, a woman that was in the need of help, physical healing, if only I touch his cloak, I will be healed. Mark 6, they begged them to let them touch even the edge of his cloak, and all who touched them were healed. Mark 8, they came to Bethsaida, and people brought to him a blind man and begged Jesus to touch him. Why the touch issue? Touch is amazing. It's amazing what touch can do. Now, the touch that the Bible's talking about here in this passage is obviously one of healing. But think of how physical touch heals. Think the difference if I say to Lisa, I miss you today, or I touch her and I say I miss you today, or I touch her and I kiss her. I missed you today. Now she's nervous. Okay, what's coming next? But that touch, it is as if life flows from your body into the other person. And this is not, well, I want to touch her, now we're going to go to the next level, okay? It's touch. It's just touching each other. It's amazing. Our kids love it when we hug each other. They'll often say, hug, 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 hug. Or they'll say, kiss, kiss. And then I'll say, oh, yuck, but then they look and they love. But touch just brings an incredible affection to marriage.
I think studies, and some of us might have heard this, is that studies have shown that every person needs 8 to 10 meaningful physical touches a day to thrive. A day. Not a week. A day to thrive. And so it's amazing, like Vanna said, how far a hug or a physical touch can go. I think often for us as wives, we need to stop and just give our husbands a hug or touch them or a kiss and say, without words, you mean a lot to me. I appreciate you. You're with me. I understand your pain or I understand your day and you're with me. It's going to be okay. So to say that with touch, without words.
Okay, so how do you bring awe and affection? Affection through words of affirmation, through thoughtfulness, and through physical touch. Let's go to the W is warmth. Okay, how do you bring warmth to your marriage and to your home? One is through grace, mercy, and patience. Okay, marriage needs a lot of that. In James chapter 3, verse 17, it says, but the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, and then listen to this part there, or look at that part there, full of mercy. It says the wisdom that comes from heaven. You want wisdom? Who of us needs wisdom from heaven for our marriages? Okay? We all need it. We need wisdom from heaven for our marriages. It says wisdom that comes from heaven is full of mercy. Full of mercy. Colossians 4 verse 6 says, let your conversations always be full of grace. What does it mean to be full of mercy? Full of grace. It means that your default is gracious. You understand what I mean by that? That the first reaction that you have, your default setting in you, is gracious. So whatever happens, the first reaction inside of you would be one of grace, not one of judgment, not one of criticism, but one of grace. So your wife comes home, she's bumped the car. What is the first reaction? Full of grace. Your husband says something inappropriate and darn out stupid. Okay? What is the first reaction? When it's your default, it is full of grace. Full of grace. Quick to overlook things. How do we become that gracious is obviously the question. Is grace... We are gracious when we know that we need it. In Luke chapter 7, Jesus spoke to a very legalistic, self-righteous man, and he told him this, there was a woman that visited was sinful, and the guy didn't want to be close to her, and he says, I tell you, her many sins, talking about the sinful woman, have been forgiven, for she loved much, but he who has been forgiven loves little. Meaning, when I think that my need for forgiveness is little, I will love little. When I think that my need for forgiveness is a lot, I would love a lot. So if I realize that I am before God Almighty, nothing but a beggar, and I need a ton of grace and mercy and love, if God is not gracious with me, I'm not going to make it. Now, if I realize that, and I spend time with my wife, or she sins against me, or does something hurtful, or says something hurtful, what should be my default reaction? One of mercy, one of grace. Because I'm paying forward to her that which I so desperately need. As I need grace. I need grace from God, I need grace from her, and I need grace from others.
I think something that I've learned in our marriage is, like Vanna said, is I want a lot of grace, and I need a lot of grace, but I want a lot of grace from him, but I'm not always willing to give it. And that's been very challenging for me personally. You know, I think for us as women, our first response can often be to judge or to be judgmental, to be self-righteous, to be critical and to want to change our husbands and to want them to do it our way. You know, when our kids were younger, I mean, they're still young, but I think when we just, you know, started out, you know, Vanna found it incredibly hard to juggle both of them at the same time. It was an adjustment for him of, you know, how little you get done, if anything at all. And, you know, from my side, it was easy to be critical of him and to feel like, to judge him on that, to compare him to me, to be impatient, to feel like, why can't you multitask? What's wrong with you? You know, this, and that's what came out in my actions, is just that attitude. And it killed our intimacy. You know, a lack of mercy kills intimacy. Mm-hmm. And, Van is an incredible father, really. He's an incredible man when it comes to his girls. I mean, I commend him for how he handles their emotions. I'm a woman, and I sometimes feel completely overwhelmed by all of the women in the house. And now that they're older, he is so much better with them than what I am. I find this phase that we're in right now very challenging. I find it difficult. And Van is just extending mercy and grace in my time of difficulty. Where when he went through that, I didn't want to. And so we all need to extend mercy. We all need to be gracious.
I mean, needless to say, that warmth, that grace, that mercy, that patience makes the home a haven. It makes it, it is a place where it is safe. Because we get criticized everywhere, okay? At work, people criticize you. I mean, everywhere, people are looking at you, skewing, and give you the evil eye, what have you. What we need at home is we don't need the evil eye at home. That brings warmth, grace, and mercy. Okay, understanding also brings warmth. In Proverbs chapter 20, verse 5, it says, the purposes of a man's heart are deep waters, but a man of understanding draws them out. The Good News Bible translated as saying, a person's thoughts are like water in a deep well. But a man of understanding draws them out. Okay? I've had to learn over the last 12 plus years is to be a man of understanding that would draw my wife out. In other words, I react. She says she is upset about a family situation, not our family, her direct family. And then immediately I think, but why would you be upset by it? Well, gee, that's not a big issue, is it? Okay, I see no one can relate to that. Now, the brothers, if you didn't get this, I'm seeing a lot of sisters nodding right now. Okay, so for the guys, maybe you don't get this with me here, but it is just, well, that doesn't really sound that hard. It's actually something, all you need to do is ABC and it's all solved. And obviously we build differently, but I had to understand that God made her different than me and understand her feelings. Understand her needs. For me, life is in facts and in reality. Okay, I tend to look at the positive side of things. In other words, my mom once, someone broke into a car, I think I shared this, someone broke into a car and stole a radio and whatever. The way that she felt about it, well, she called me, told me about the experience. And my first question was, which window did they knock out? And she said, no, the small one at the back. And I said, geez, what a bargain. I could have knocked out the big one. So that's where my mind naturally goes. Obviously, she felt like her car has been infiltrated by the enemy. And there was a lot of emotion around it. And a man of understanding draws out deep waters. A man of understanding brings someone someone closer to them.
Sorry. I think you don't have to agree with your spouse to understand. You don't have to say much or have all the answers or be the expert. You simply need to listen to understand. And that's amazing because it takes off a lot of pressure for us as women. You just need to listen and be willing to understand. You know, Vanda needs me to care, not be an expert. He needs me to show empathy. It's words like, or saying things like, this must be incredibly hard for you. It doesn't mean what I'm not saying through that what he's doing is right, but I'm affirming, I'm saying, I hear you, I understand, this must be incredibly hard. I think once again, for us as women, we're so quick to want our husbands to understand us. You know, we are from Venus and they're from Mars. They need to understand us. They've got to come over to us. But men also need to be understood. And we can often listen and be quiet and suck it up, but we don't understand. That makes sense. And our emotions can jump from one place to another very, very quickly. You know, sometimes Van is still trying to figure out Venetian language, but I've jumped to French already, and from French to German. And he's like, hold on, where are you now? You know, and I've got to be understanding of that. I can't expect him to immediately jump with me. I've got to accommodate that. You know, to listen is to listen with a non-judgmental attitude. It's really wanting to understand. It's giving eye contact. It's not busy doing something with the kids as you're trying to listen. It's to not interrupt him. It's to not fidget. I think we as women always want to be busy. Vine is talking to me and I'm busy with something creative here on the side, or you know, it's to listen, it's to focus, it's to show gratitude that he's busy confiding in you. It's to be willing to accept his feelings and his emotions, whether he's right or wrong. That's wanting to understand.
Understanding makes or breaks a marriage in many ways. And I have faulted in this in so many avenues. And one of the biggest for us most probably was when we're not medically supposed to be able to have children. Okay? Now we have three. But we found that out, and the same week that we found out that we were pregnant with our first child, we also found out that we are not supposed to be able to have children, and that the chance of us having children is 0.0000001 or something like that. And so that was very hard for Lisa. For me, it was like, wow, she's pregnant and we can't have children. That's cool. Okay. She was already thinking of child number two and that we won't be able to have child number two. I was thinking, man, deal with one. You know, work at it. And that was the beginning of most probably the three hardest years of my life, was that lack of understanding. Because then what would happen is she would feel, but wow, she's not sure if we're going to do the one-child thing. And I would think, well, if God wants us to have two, we'll obviously give us two. So if we don't have to. Now, that sounds very faithful and whatever. It's not faithful. It's just realism. I was living in a world of realism and had absolutely zero understanding or empathy for her world of emotion. And so what she was feeling is as real as my facts. And the experiences that she was having is as real as the facts are on the table for me. And I just had zero empathy. It almost killed our marriage. It got to a point, and I've shared this publicly before, it got to a point where I didn't want to go home. I did, but I didn't want to. And I once told her that, and then she told me, and I don't want you to come home. Okay? Now, through God's grace and the help of people, we've been able to work through that. But where that all sprung from was my inability to try to understand. And along the way, I can't remember even how I got this, but someone gave me this advice once and said that you got to first seek to understand and not to be understood. First seek to be to understand and not to be understood. And what my tendency is, I want you to understand me. And I want you to understand my point. I want you to understand that if God wants us to have a child, he'll give it to us. And I want you to understand all of this. And now she expresses her emotions. And then so clearly she's not understanding what I'm saying. Eh? So what I need to do is I just need to go at it again. Versus seeking to understand and not to be understood is, and this is a decision I made, I don't know, about a year ago or so, is I said that I'm not going to go that route anymore. I'm always going to see myself as wrong first. Did you notice that at all? Not really. Maybe we should have spoken about that beforehand. Okay. But I made an intentional decision saying whatever she says, whatever she brings up, in whatever capacity, no matter where, when, or how, I'm going to see myself as wrong. And I'm going to try and understand why it is that she feels that way. Okay. And I think that has brought a lot of healing to what I've caused before. So number two there is understanding. We're going to skip past that scripture. We'll go to the last one, you're on warmth, and we're going to close out with this point and then take a break. It's to be interested in one another. Here is a long passage in Philippians chapter 2 that says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only at your own interest, but also at the interest of others. Your attitude should be the same as that of Christ Jesus, who being in the very nature of God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. And being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross. If you think of being interested and supported, obviously Jesus is the absolute exceptional example of what it means to be interested and supported, where it says that he made himself nothing. He did not consider his own interest the happiness of heaven, but made himself nothing, became obedient to death on the cross, that he could be, one, show his interest in us and be supportive in us and our need for redemption. Okay? Support, interest. By nature, we are most interested in ourselves. One of the biggest evils, most probably, of our marriage and our sinful nature is our inherent selfishness, that it is all about me. It's about my hobbies. It's about my job. It's about what I like. It's about what I need. And we know how to do that as husbands, don't we? We know how to be interested in ourselves. We know how to schedule the soccer game or the rugby game to watch that. We know how to come up with a plan to buy that car that we want or the gadget that we want. We know how to give the time and energy required that our hobbies need. We know how to do that stuff, but we don't know that well how to do it with our wives. Meaning to be supportive and interested is to be as supportive and as interested for their need to just have tea with some friends or go shopping or whatever it is that they need, to be as supportive and as interested to create that time for them, to enable them to have the energy to do so, and to be able for them to have the money in their pocket to be able to do it. I know there's budgetary issues and what have you, but here's the fascinating thing, man. We are able to work it out for ourselves, right? When it's something you want, I mean, you become the most strategic individual that ever lived on the face of the earth, okay? Meaning you work out how you will afford it, how that could work, where you could make cutbacks, how this is going to happen. But it is going to happen because that is what you want. Our wives desperately need us to have that same attitude and spirit and mind when it comes to them and what it is that they're interested in. What it would mean to be supportive to their, whether it career, be it their career, whether it be if they're a stay-at-home mom, being with the kids at home, whether it be a hobby, they need that same thing.
You know, God has made it clear that he created the wife to be a helper to her husband. And I think what I found very challenging with this is that I can often feel or think that, you know, I'm at, you know, I need to make the house, the dinner, and the home, and create an atmosphere. And I'm naturally in that role, if that makes sense, of a helper, of a support, of of being interested in. And so I think just realizing that it goes a lot further than that. Because often I want to feel at the end of the day, okay, I've done my bit. Ever felt that way? Sort of I've done my part, and I want to stop. And being supportive goes so much further than that. It's our husbands need so much more than that. Vanna needs a lot more. And to be interested in his work, his interests, his hobbies. Now, he doesn't like sport, but if your husband likes sport, what was the score of the match? It's being genuinely interested. I appreciate so much when sisters go to games with their spouses and they don't enjoy sport themselves. It's so funny when you're in a mall, like when you're in Tiger Valley and you watch husbands and wives. I mean, I think for women, we expect our husbands to go everywhere with us in a mall. You know, oh, wow, look at this cute little dress and, you know, the shoes. And they just need to come close to audio vision. And we're like, you want to what? You want to go into that shop? You know, it's are you crazy? What are you thinking? You know, I think, but when they don't want to go to the beach shop, we feel dropped and so disappointed and not taken care of. It's such a silly thing. But that's where we've got to be interested in what they're interested in, and because that leads to support. You know, Vanna and I were saying, imagine Tiger Valley was just filled with shops for gadgets. I mean, we probably, as women, would never go there. But that's how life is set up. It's for women, you know, and our interests. But it's to take ourselves out of our comfort zone and be interested in them.
On a practical level, you need to figure out what this would mean for your spouse. And again, I think Lisa is astounding with that for me. In terms of the nature of my work is very demanding, with lots of relationships, lots of connections, lots of planning, lots of things happening all the time. And also what it includes is traveling. Now, I'm not particularly a traveler or I don't like traveling, but it requires traveling. Some of the traveling for me is international traveling, which means that I'm then away from the family. Now, I mean, the kind of things that Lisa would do is recently, or a couple of months ago, we had a surprise third child. We're still surprised by it. I think, I don't know, she was 2-3 months old, and there was a meeting that if I could attend it in Miami, it would really help us as a congregation, okay? It would help us with this year and a conference that we had at the beginning of the year to try and get us speakers to come to that. It would help us with hiring someone to work in our campus ministry year. It would really help, but it would be very demanding on her. I mean, that would mean that I'd be out of town for 7 or 8 days where she has 3 children by herself day and night with a 3-month-old baby. It's not fun, okay? But Lisa's first reaction with those things is always, yes, absolutely. I'd ask her, what do you think? And I'll say, please go and think about it some more. What can I do? And obviously from my side, I'll try and help with back home. How can I help build a structure here to make sure that she's safe and secure here and communicate with her several times a day from the United States to make sure she's okay? But I appreciate her support in that. And sometimes I've actually not taken those trips, and yet she said, I would love you to. It is, I started getting involved in our family and youth devotionals for the congregation members also when Pippa was born. And it was a need at that time to be able to do. And what that would mean is that every second Friday night, I would be at the family and youth devotional. But we also have midweek services, and we also have many other things happening throughout the week. And again, she's, if this is going to help, I know it's important for the church, important for you. It's supportive. Now, again, I don't just let it go. We try and work it out as best as we can that I can look after her needs and make sure that I help as much with the kids as I can. But it's just being supportive. That support creates warmth, and it gives you the W of the all. What we're going to do right now is we're going to take a 15-minute coffee break. There's some water, some